Hey guys, welcome. I'm very happy and proud to have Jeff Booth coming on. Jeff Booth is the author of The Price of Tomorrow. Now, I think you all want to have a little look at this book. I find it excellent topically, and the manner and on the content that I've witnessed as part of the preparation of him is exceedingly eloquent in describing where we are at in this fiat system that we currently exist. So first of all, Jeff, delighted to have you on. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me, Francis. Pleasure.
And just to give you that nice loosener that I think you're so adept at delivering, where the hell are we in this macro financial system?
So we're on a confluence of two huge forces, that are butting up against each other. One, the free market, which is increasingly deflationary, opposing another one that is a controlled market that is increasingly inflationary to protect the existing system from failing. And in technology, and what I would say is really simply, these seven words combined, the natural state of the free market is deflation. I have a lot of people, I have a lot of people nodding when they hear the natural state of the free market is deflation. And they all recognize that, and they all recognize it because we use things that give us more value. So if an entrepreneur is going to create something that gives you less value, it fails in the market. And so now if the natural state of the free market is deflation, and we have now technology moving exponentially to give us more value, that means the natural state of the world is every single person on the planet gets richer by the goods and services falling in price to them. They get more for less every year. That's what the natural state of the market, the derivative of what I just said, is that. So
yeah, and that brings in all concepts like economies of scale, efficiencies. You've mentioned the technological element. All of these things should actually mean, if we didn't have the other force, that everything should each year cost you less than the previous year, isn't it?
Yeah. So that is the natural state of the market. And because prices fall to the marginal cost of production in a free market. And so the marginal cost of production, say of a line of code of your calculator app, is zero. The marginal cost of production of a line of code created by other lines of code in AI is zero. And so you can naturally see why now we have exponentially reducing prices, but we live in so that on one side of the ledger, and you have to decompartmentalize because now if that is true, which it is true, and all economists would tell you that what I'm just saying is true, then why do prices go up? And we live in a credit-based system, and that credit-based system has to remove that productivity, has to steal that productivity, because the debt is already insolvent. So it has to continually monetize the debt and print more money to be able to stop the deflation from happening, or overall deflation from happening. Because if deflation happened from a credit-based system, the entire credit-based system and everything in your life would fail to zero. It would keep on collapsing until governments came in and bailed out every bank and every institution to say, we're going to stop the collapse because it's just built on credit. And so this is the thing that I picked up in my book if you read my book, you could say, I said, if I'm right, that deflation is a natural force, it always has been, the free market is deflation, and all we do all over the world is trade with each other to try to find more value, then, and we're moving into an technology super cycle or exponential technology where that's happening faster and faster, then there should be something visible on the other side of the ledger displaying the almost the inverse of that. And so what I found is the smoking gun was in the last 20 years from 99 to 2019, the debt had risen by 185 trillion to grow the economies by 46 trillion. And instead of looking at one tiny part of the debt market, the US market or Brazil or anywhere else, you had to look at the global debt because we trade with each other all over the world. And so what was global debt and what was global GDP rise? So $4 of debt for every $1 in GDP rise. And that wasn't, so you found it and you realize, Of course, because technology is moving faster, the debt must grow faster to be able to stop it. And then the monetization of the debt had to grow faster to stop that because there was no way to pay it back. So then fast forward 4 years later from when I wrote my book, what's the global debt today? Because technology is moving faster still. And the global debt, so in the last 4 years, the global debt, the total debt at that time was 250 trillion. And now the total debt, not unfunded liabilities, is about 400 trillion. So we've increased the debt again in the last 4 years by another 150 trillion. And everybody, and so you create this more and more abundant money, which is creating scarcity everywhere else. Abundance in money creates scarcity. Scarcity in money creates abundance. And most people are measuring their entire life, everything, every trade from that system that's just debasing their currencies and making everything scarce in their life. And they're dividing into that system, and they're dividing left and right, and climate change or no climate change, or response. And all of those control structures are designed to make the system stronger. There is no fix from that system. It just gets worse and worse and worse because remember, if you nod your head to the natural state of the free market as deflation, then you must also nod to your head to anything that stops that deflation from reaching the society is not an economy, it's a control structure.
Absolutely. And I think you say far more nicely for the YouTube algorithm that we're actually living in a captured world than I tend to do. That they are actually countervailing an incredible boon that is the technological parabola of influence and capability in the disinflationary side by actually countervailing it, that huge gift, with the greatest of sins, which is inflation, really. And debt currency is borrowed into existence. So there's so much just to unpack in that. And everybody's measuring wealth or progress on a tired monkey on a greased pole, instead of realizing that the basis for comparison is actually crumbling in your eyes in terms of its downturn. And I always think of those dollar devaluation charts where we're sort of 97% or 99% down on where it once was. And given all of that, your very strong solution that you're putting, you're putting your placing your bets here is on Bitcoin. Talk to us more about what people should be doing, and or the well, not should, that's an imperative word, but what the facts to you have meant in terms of how you've chosen, in a more gestalt way, how you've chosen to react to that and the solutions you've come to.
So before I do this, I just want to say I too didn't understand Bitcoin like I should have 4 years ago, 6 years ago, 8 years ago. And the journey to understanding Bitcoin is a journey. And I think what polarizes Bitcoin from a lot of people is there's a whole bunch of people that as soon as they get it, they wonder why everybody else didn't get it, and they act like they always knew it. And so it's and it's very confusing. It's a very confusing topic. So let's start with the end of my book. I had one paragraph about Bitcoin on why it might be a solution to be able to transition the world from the world we lived in, that everybody was measuring by the system creating all of the problem, to a different to a different system, and it would be a slow transition. But even at that time, at the end of the throughout writing my book, I realized how bad this was going to get from the existing system. In fact, that's why I wrote it in the first place. I worried about my kids growing up in that world, and what the transition would look like. And so as I was writing my book, I was obviously buying a bunch more Bitcoin and understanding that a lot more. But before I wrote my book, I had a small bet in it, and almost a hedge, and I didn't pay much attention to it. So the journey to understand this is really difficult. And why would the journey to be understand it be difficult? Is if everything's measured from a system, and something like Bitcoin was the first time you had decentralization and security together, the first time in history, that means all of our history books would be filled with priors or errors because the winners write the history books. And there was nothing like Bitcoin before. So if it was truly decentralized and secure, meaning every government attack made it stronger, it was decentralized and secure and got stronger and stronger and stronger, then nothing like that has ever been seen in history. We in history, we always, and gold would be serve as a good example, right? Gold would keep institutions in check for some time, sometimes hundreds of years. But because it needed to be centralized, and you had to build soft money on top of gold because it couldn't be traded around as fast in an economy, it needed to be centralized. It always broke, and it always allowed the in time
The
to
cheaters
go
to cheat.
to cheaters to cheat. And so we
Just on
have,
that, can I make an interjection? When you say the soft money on top of gold, that's the beginning of establishing a derivative proxy.
That's right. That's right. But the
That's the
derivative,
phrase I would have. A fiat, in that case, a faith-based derivative proxy. And when you
and you keep going. No, you keep going.
So the just embellishing that a little bit further out, because I'm putting a marker down maybe for later on in our chat. When I listen to Larry Fink, who I know we're going to get to as well, it's quite clear to me that the most exciting thing to him is actually the tokenization, which transcends bound national boundaries and means you can have a unique identifying and everybody will know who you are. And this points to my concerns regarding the more surveillance financy type elements, and that tokenization itself is going to become a derivative proxy of physical assets. People are already talking about real world assets, the RWA theme. And is
Can we,
Bitcoin not a long-term?
Francis, I think we need to break this down because it's such a complicated topic. We have to break it down to first principles because people are conflating different things with each other. And what I would say is that is this. When I say if it de says decentralized and secure, and I'm going to go deep, way deeper into why it will stay decentralized and secure. But the reason I say if as a first principle is so people do their own homework to be able to understand why it will, and so they need to understand that. And that'll take a whole bunch of work, and you'll have to remove your bias from a whole bunch of other things, because I know for me it had to do the same thing. When I wrote my book, I had a 5% probability that Bitcoin would fail. And what I realized is, and even though I knew the existing system I lived in would completely fail, and the risk of Bitcoin was less than the existing system, I still weighted my portfolio to the existing system and less to Bitcoin, even though I assumed it had a 5% probability. Now
That's
here's
the
the now here
security.
but yeah
That's
here,
the
here's
security.
here, yeah here's the
The security
important
of the devil, basically, instead of the opportunity you don't yet know.
In other words, my risk weighting, even though I knew the probabilities of both systems, I was not measuring risk appropriately even at that time. But here's what I here here's what as I tried to kill Bitcoin in every possible way, because here's my view. If human history has always co-opted systems, because if you could steal a little bit of money from everybody on the planet, the productivity, the prices following the marginal cost of production, that everybody on the planet, you steal a little bit, 2%, 5% from them each year, then there's so much power in money that you know that human greed will do anything to do that. So if we're all living in a system that's 10,000 times bigger than Bitcoin today, making that system stronger with every one of our actions, then to keep Bitcoin decentralized and secure against that pressure would be such a monumental task. I didn't underestimate that monumental task. So that's why I put a 5% probability that it would fail. And then over doing more and more work, I realized it wasn't the 5% chance it was going to fail, 5% probability it was going to fail. It was my misunderstanding of what made Bitcoin special. And so I decreased the probability, and I decreased it again, and I decreased it again to a point where I am right now is almost certain it's going to reprice the entire existing financial system, entire world, and we're going to be living on a Bitcoin, it's almost certain. Now, everybody can make their own decision on what that looks like, but from my view, and we can go way deeper, it will go way deeper into this, that so if you look at right now, if people take Bitcoin and they price it in their currency and they take it to the max, and they look at US dollars, you can see it's just hitting an all-time high today. If they take it into Argentina, they'll see a huge spike. If they take it into Turkey, they'll see a huge spike. If they take it into Egypt. So you know that everybody all over the world also thinks their piece of paper is worth something. So when people when people are measuring Bitcoin price, what they're doing is they're taking the only thing that has no counterparty risk to the existing system, and then they're pricing it in their existing pieces of paper to price the world.
Yeah.
When what is actually happening, and you could look at this if you just take the max of all of these other currencies and you can look at it, is all currencies are losing value and everything is losing value to Bitcoin at different rates. And so now if you price things in Bitcoin versus the currency, you can see things like this. This house I'm in right now, 4 years ago, cost $1.4 million. Today it costs $2.1 million in my Canadian currency. But in Bitcoin, it cost 300 Bitcoin 4 years ago. It cost 20 Bitcoin today. And in 4 years, it's going to cost 2 Bitcoin. So it is, when I said the thing that solves the paradox of these two systems, in Bitcoin, you are measuring the free market and all prices will fall forever in Bitcoin. And if you want to price Bitcoin from your existing market, then you can do that, but it doesn't care. All it is an honest ledger. It doesn't care it doesn't care if a government wants to print more 30% more dollars. It doesn't care if Mele gets elected or this person gets elected, it doesn't care. It's repricing the world. It's repricing the price of prices falling to the marginal cost of production and all the debt getting exploded and everything else. It's repricing the world from that system, and it will forever if it stays decentralized and secure.
So a couple of things just to say. It's firstly been pretty volatile during that period. So in your house analogy, we may be marked to market, we're currently making a new high. So volatility has to be borne in account. And one of the things people will say is that when you make purchasing decisions or valuations decisions, you can't always be in a position where you're timing it with a bull market in Bitcoin at that point. So I'm assuming at some point you expect the volatility to continue to reduce as growing market caps would typically imply.
I expect for a long time volatility might even increase because we're so early in this cycle. I would imagine 99% of your listeners
here. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right? The 99%.
You're talking 900 trillion global economy and you're talking 1 trillion or...
$1 trillion. And the 1 trillion is repricing everything else. So if you just wanted to do a really quick ledger here, what Bitcoin will be worth. And I want to be careful of, because this is, but I'm going to say it anyways, and then I'll qualify it. So today, $900 trillion divided by 21 million. That's your purchasing power of Bitcoin today, extrapolated through the future as it reprices everything. By the time it gets there, we won't be living in $900 trillion market because the amount of monetary easing, the amount of manipulation of currencies, it has to explode. It'll be 5 quadrillion. So the purchasing power of that Bitcoin will look way higher in these fake paper units 10, 20 years from now. The other side of that ledger is all prices keep falling radically. So the purchasing power of that Bitcoin is worth way more than the 900 trillion today because the prices keep falling forever relative to Bitcoin. So those two things, they're so, and that's what causes people so much grief. If this system is truly decentralized and it can't be stopped, then it is not negotiating with politicians. It is not negotiating with you. And you're
Can I come in on that if, because Let's be frank, the people that are in the winning and the pound seats are the people that we consider status that are behind putting us on the wrong side of the compound interests equation, the inflation, the central banking cartel. They've seized most of the high ground. It's deeply unlikely, just game theorying out, that they would allow something to survive. And I remember an era. So I must also say I've been in Bitcoin. I was in the 2016 consensus in New York. I've recognized this as revolutionary, and I'm playing the part of skeptic to think through this. But understanding history and the dark state's role in things, there's nothing they're going to allow that creates that will, they will never let you. One of my favorite sayings is they'll never let you own your own money. It must be something inherently they control so that they can maintain that aspect that you described so eloquently in there. You then have the NSA 1996, very looky-likey. We had the same thing with Facebook, LifeLog. The dark states and the intelligence community have had slush funds that are deep as, I don't know, some of the biggest wells in the world and keep getting filled up for nefarious activities. How do you square this notion that they're going to let this one rat out of the burning barn, that let's call it Bitcoin, to survive and repropagate this freedom for those that are engaged therein, when the whole goal is looking like a creeping totalitarianism? Why would they let it happen? And why actually are they almost institutionalizing it now if they're not already confident that they've captured it? And that they have a plan for it, which could be positive. I also include the positive and a negative, because they're going to have a CBDC out. It's going to compete. You get a CBDC that burns and disappears in 6 months, use it or lose it, or is tracking you, or is won't allow you to buy more than 3 steaks a week, or you know, all these climate change, which we all see coming and are all built-in features that are already largely accepted as being not far down the pipe. Why would they allow this unique money that doesn't have any of those restrictions to coexist? Because if I'm in the future and I get a swathe of CBDC for UBI because my business was destroyed, etc., I'm buying Bitcoin. I'm dumping theirs and I'm buying Bitcoin. So there's going to be some, everyone's going to run and hoard into the best money.
So Francis, this is... Now, I don't know how much time we have to do this. We'll do this, but ask me some other questions based on it, because one of the things you'll find, and I'm hoping from what I'm about to say, is you'll find that a bunch of your work is actually making the existing system stronger while you think you're helping. And you'll find a whole bunch of the people that you're following, you are doing the same thing by yelling at the system. And I use an example that, and so for me, this simple statement, there is no they, only we, but our incentives make the system stronger, and it's our incentive. So I'll use an example of Google, right? Or the technology we're using to do this podcast right now. We all know we wouldn't use it if the price went way up.
Yeah.
Right. So if Google charged $5 a click, we wouldn't use it. So we use it more and more, and the only way they can make us use it more and more is driving more and more AI and automation and more control of our information to be able to control it. So we use it every day because of the value it gives us, and we make that trade-off, and we make that trade-off. And then we invest our money into Google, because if we didn't invest our money into Google, it loses money faster in the banks. Yeah. So there
you
is
mean
no,
by buying their stock?
By buying their stock. So with the magnificent, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Magnificent Seven, if you don't invest in there, you're losing money faster. The S&P is down, right, in real terms.
Yes,
and so
the Magnificent
Seven. Down a lot in real terms. So if you take out the top companies that are all AI companies that we use every day because they give us more value, and they're consolidating more and more information and moving into state and moving into consolidation with the state actors to be able to do that, then we're making that whole thing stronger every day. Here's the interesting, everything you are,
just
I am
on the value proposition, if I can interrupt again, essentially they're doing a play now pay later model, essentially, because we are giving up data that will be weaponized against us that we're not yet feeling the cost of while we're getting the value up front.
So why do you think every AI company is trying to make you fearful of AI? Because regulation protect it doesn't protect you, it protects a monopoly. Marginal cost of production falling to zero means that AI is zero. And so they have to drive fear into you to be able to regulate AI to create monopolies. Same thing in money. You today live in a system with regulation to protect your money from a system that's stealing it.
Yeah.
And so you're paying more for the regulators to protect you from a system that's stealing the money. Now, you don't have a vote in that system.
I 100% agree on that. And they did that with Bitcoin as well when they did the drug running,
Let's keep going because this is this is critical to that I kind of land this plane. So that is the system that you live in and you're making stronger. And all of the actions yelling at WEF, those people, every action within there makes it stronger. Every single action. If you want to turn over cars, burn buildings, you go home to sleep. Where does the money come to fix those things? It comes from you.
Insurance
it's
companies.
All, and here's the thing. Money has always been superordinate to laws. When money is broken, laws change in favor of the people creating the laws. And if it didn't look like that, then all over the world with the most broken money, you would have the best laws protecting citizens. So we know for sure when money is broken, it protects the people criminals. Most criminals. It's a criminal organization, right? And the only thing on the planet that is outside of that control is Bitcoin. It's because of that decentralized and security. So you could expect to just keep and we're going to go into deeper in a second after your question on why that is and the risk of it becoming centralized. But you could expect if what we're saying is true, and it is true, you know it and I know it, and all of our actions within that system make the system stronger over us. You're playing prisoner's dilemma. And everybody's getting weaker as the system's taking more control. And the only thing outside of that system is Bitcoin. You could expect every attack vector, every media attack vector, all of the information you're looking through to in your world to be attacking Bitcoin in every different possible way. You could expect that. I expect that and more. And still, Bitcoin will not fail. And so... So we can go into why, unless you have a question first, but that's what I want people to understand. The lens they're looking to measure the world, the lens that they're making stronger with all the actions of fighting people on the left or right or WEF and everything else, they are making, and through all of their economic choices in the things they use, are making the system stronger for the system that is killing them. And they're telling themselves, it's those people. There is no they. It's only we.
So in one of my plans is to de-digitize and, you know, go farm and prep and grow my own stuff and kind of isolate myself away for what could be a bit pretty draconian period. And that would be Faraday cages and not using the internet to nearly the same degree and all of these things coming out of the system, which is part and parcel of what you're saying. Don't make them stronger by giving them all your data, your stuff, and engaging them and swearing at them. You're just building them up.
There's a better way.
Go ahead, yeah, jump in.
So this is the thing that I realized in Bitcoin. As I realized, and this is what created a venture capital company in Bitcoin to invest in the best and the brightest all around the world to be able to accelerate this transition to Bitcoin. But I realized before I did that, and here's what made me create the venture capital company, because I wanted to move all my time. If my time in the system was making the system stronger and it was making me more and more mad and more angry, then it was my actual actions that were making it stronger. And I had this, and I realized, wow, I'm a hypocrite. I have a hedge against this system. Because I own Bitcoin, I have a hedge against the system collapse while I'm making existing system stronger with all my actions. So I'm on all these boards in the existing system, and everybody's paying and high demand in technology in the existing system. And I realized I had to move all of my time into the new system. I'm going to tell you right now, by moving my time into the new system, virtually all of it, and so if I was 90-10 before, now I'm 10-90.
And the other way, good for you. Yeah.
I spend Bitcoin every day. I try to purchase. I'm creating the rails, helping entrepreneurs create the rails to stop what will come to try to capture Bitcoin. And I'm investing in this. And if you saw what was happening here, this is what I want to get into. If you saw what was happening here, it is the most hopeful thing for humanity. And it is not just hopeful. It's growing so fast, it's going to be impossible to stop. But remember, I'm at a very unique position than most people are. I'm not only understand how Bitcoin is different and it's decentralized and secure and it's almost unbreakable, but also how my actions and other actions and this flood of people that are coming in to build on this decentralized secure layer are transitioning this faster. And what instead of thinking of Bitcoin as a coin or something else, here's a framework you could use. We see way more companies than we see technologies, and we see protocols very rarely. So it would make sense that if we see more companies, we would first look at Bitcoin as a company, right? Or like Ethereum and all these other essentially quasi companies that are unlike Bitcoin. So, and then we would see technologies. And so we don't see broad-based technologies very often, like electricity or AI. So they come around less often than the company formation on top of it. And very, very rare are protocols. And protocols come in layers. And they come in, the first layer of the internet is TCP/IP. And that was developed by DARPA in the 60s. And it does one very narrow thing. And it has to sufficiently harden. And what I mean by harden is if that failed, nothing could be built on top of it. So there's attacks everywhere. It gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And then another layer gets built on top of it. Same thing happens in another layer. Then another layer gets on top of it. And the fourth layer of the internet is HTTP, which is the backbone of this video call we're doing right now and is the backbone of this, developed in 2007. That fourth layer came in 1989. And then all the entrepreneurs built on top of these layers to give us what we think of today. And so what's happening in Bitcoin? Bitcoin is the most simple explanation tied to this, what I can say, is it's an open, decentralized, and secure protocol. The first layer, bounded by energy and creating more energy abundance by its very nature. And so every year it gets more decentralized and secure, the base layer, what we're talking about.
Just on the more centralized, I have to come in a little bit because there's a couple of things that people will throw stones, and if I let it go too long, it's unchallenged. So for example, you know, Richard Hart, he's pointed out, and others, that there were two inflation bugs in Bitcoin's history. There was certainly one that a Bitcoin Cash developer found out. So the sort of immutable code, as if it was sort of divinely perfect. There's a little bit of, sometimes we evangelize, sometimes once we've crossed the river. And the imperfections that actually show, you know, your reliance on flawless code, had that fallen into the wrong hands straight away, you could have had the entire system compromised. You've tapered your 5% risk down to a very negligible amount just for keeping your mind open and not becoming a believer, which is a loss of rationality. You've retained an open window, and I respect you for that. But given that, for example, as a simple example,
let me just specifically talk about that. That's actually what I mean by sufficiently harden, because it has to withstand all of these attacks. It has to resolve. It has to stand the 2017 blockchain wars. It has to withstand that to be sufficiently decentralized and secure. It has to withstand all of these potential bugs, same as TCP/IP. It has to, because if it fails, then nothing could be built on top of it and nothing could happen. And what I would say is in 15 years, it's never been hacked. And it's never been hacked. Some of these bugs were found. They were fixed. And who were they fixed by? They were fixed by the community of people that are holding the actual people that are holding this, the nodes holding it decentralized and secure. I run a node, as do tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of other people around the world.
And you want the system to win. I get that.
And all of these people. So you're voting in your node in your best interest. And that decentralized is security. So I would have to vote against my self-interest for a change in the code. And so would everybody else. And more people are learning about why decentralization and security is critical for society for flourishing. Because the opposite, if you had AI running as fast as AI is running, the central control of everything, if it is not, and the power that you give to your central controllers is so staggering, it would look so horrific for humanity. By the way, living standards would have to go down because the free market is more productive than a centralized market. So living standards would have to collapse in the existing system. So there's so many people now that know about this, the insight of this decentralization and security, and how many people are racing to protect it and creating more innovation to be able to protect it is what I'm talking about. Once that insight is seen, I'm not ever going back. Never.
Yeah.
Nobody.
But could you be victim to another bug being found, only this time instead of being someone who said, hey, I don't want to see you fail, I'm Bitcoin Cash, it's not good for us either, a malicious actor? Had it been, it could have been different. That could have been a major point of failure.
I thought I had a foolproof
break-in house. Someone broke in and actually got in and got to my gold safe, but thank God it was my brother. And he didn't take anything, but he warned me.
Yeah, Francis. Now, first off, on this, all of these things that you're saying, I agree. We should be vigilant. I'm completely open, but I am probably so much more paranoid than what you're coming at. Because I know that there's a system that's 10,000 times bigger. And all the momentum and everything else that it has at its disposal to kill this. I know that. And still, what I'm saying is my actions count, as do yours, as do everybody else, to be able to vote our time into the system that's accelerating and repricing everything else. And so the more time that I spend attacking or scared of this new system,
I'm not scared of the new system. Yeah. Like you, I agree the old system is dead. The only difference that I have is that they are knowing that themselves and they need a recreation. The old donkey is dying, the old mule, and they know they need to transition. We are coming to a transition. And I'm not talking about gender. I'm talking about our financial rails. We're going from the rickety old iron horse to the monorail. But the problem most are going to have is they're going to be stripped of their assets still left on the train, and they're going to come without the shirt of their back onto the new monorail and going to be ward of state, UBI, etc. This is my great concern for followers and citizens, that it's going to be a wealth culling of rents and for the citizenry, and they will have finished off their flattening of the Gini curve, and we end up in that totalitarian technological Bolshevik communism where we all ward of state.
It won't happen. You know why it won't happen? Humans weren't designed to live in cages. It won't happen. There's no possibility.
We already got caged in March 2020 for quite a substantial period, and everybody complied to my disgust. Most people.
But not everybody. And what you'll find, and the not everybody, those people who were outside of the system that looked crazy to it, that fought against it, don't look crazy anymore.
But that's what I mean.
So that's why the free market works. When Galileo looked up in the stars and he realized that the church and state was wrong and the truth was different because he could look outside the system and see something different, he looked like a heretic. They jailed him. But once that truth is found, it spreads and it spreads. And
I love the optimism of that, and truth being your best weapon. I mean, it's our, you know, we say, you know, truth, you know, heavens above. Being accurate verbally is literally the interrogation mark behind truth. And that is, you know, it's probably my driving principle. That what is the honest, true fact about it, with a bit of game theory skepticism. So, but are you saying in your own mind that the existing powers that be that involve these Bilderberg groups, the CFRs and all of this, haven't thought of a replacement system?
No, I'm not saying that.
So you're let's game theory, we're them now, and we're part of legacy families. We've lived off an extraction mechanism, a rentier seeking system, and we know we're at the parabola end of a debt cycle. That's time is very well overdue almost, and they literally, but you know, band-aiding it together, duct taping it together. So do you think they have no plan? And if they do, what would it be? Surely it must be Bitcoin.
No. So it's this conversation could go on, by the way, for weeks, and I could spend weeks.
It's a good conversation.
It's a great conversation. So first of all, we have to recognize all of the talks about them, all of the talks about what they're going to do, make them stronger. All of the talks, while we use all of these things, we make the whole thing stronger. So we have to realize the hypocrites in us. And if we don't move to Bitcoin and put our energy there, in the only thing that's disconnected from, that's separate from that system, then it is our actions. That's why I say there is no
way. Is it separate from the system? You see, you're starting with that as a basic assumption.
First, I'll tell you why, and then you ask the question based on the why. You have a new decentralized, open, decentralized, secure protocol, bounded by energy, creating more of an energy abundance, and so you have a system tied to physics, energy. Energy is life. The other system isn't tied to energy. It's tied to pieces of paper that price energy. This system is tied as a base layer to physics. So ask the question on why isn't that different?
So Satoshi Nakamoto is a fairy tale. So let me sketch a scenario for you, caricature style. Satoshi Nakamoto is a dark state agent acronym for a group of techies that were set the sample conveniently after the end of the subprime crash to launch. They probably were preparing well before, knowing what was coming, to create this pony of a new system that we would all be moving off the old donkey onto the new white horse. The bulk of his tokens are set unmoved. So there's this incredibly benevolent individual that disappeared into the ether, never to be found again.
Or died.
That created this massive gift, never wanted to be known for it, never wanted to collect his award for it. How does BlackRock not eventually assume custodial control over those tokens potentially at some point? Quantum computing could probably do things that this original system wasn't designed to withstand. How do you position it as even competing fairly? Because they're going to launch a CBDC with what they want. Are you saying they're going to fail with their CBDCs and their behavior management that's going to go with that? Or is there going to be a two-tier society where the uber wealth have Bitcoin, they can buy anything they want, they can pay carbon credits, it's all cheap to them, Bitcoin's an unbelievable sum, etc. And those that never moved early and fast are now trapped in this second class. I can see that being a scenario. That's a great outcome for Bitcoin and people that get into Bitcoin, but that's very divisive, clearly. What is the forward route?
You have so many different questions within that question, but I'll try to first the Satoshi Nakamoto thing. When I say decent, when you say that, then you would assume that having more Bitcoin would make it decentralized, and having more Bitcoin doesn't give you any more votes. The person with 0.1 of a Bitcoin and running a node has the same vote as somebody with 10 million or a million Bitcoin. So you have to, in the existing system
That's
we
very
live in,
positive, by the way.
yeah,
I get
very
that
positive.
point. Very
Yeah.
positive.
So,
Because it takes the billionaire class out of keeping you in poverty.
exactly. So the existing system you live in, and this is why this is so hard to understand, because even when we look at something through a new lens, even if we understand that, what's totally normal throughout history is we carry our existing baggage into that system, thinking it acts like this system. So we convert it to what our prior knowledge is, instead of looking at what the new rules impose. And that is one of the examples that lots of people make that mistake, because the existing system keeps on making the billionaires greater and greater wealth by extracting our wealth. And this system works exactly the opposite. So there's 2,650 billionaires in the world. There's 60 odd million millionaires in the world. Maybe more than that with equity values of houses, but and there's 21 million Bitcoin. In other words, all of those people can't have a Bitcoin.
No.
So no wonder that the war against this thing would be huge, because it moves all of the product. It moves from rent.
I'm not feeling the war is against it right now. I'm seeing BlackRock, one of the
no,
most.
No, okay. So now I wanted to offer your second question.
Yeah.
So we know through gold, it didn't allow this to happen for long periods of time. It happened for periods of time, but it didn't allow this to allow the natural state of the market to allow deflation for long periods of time, because it got centralized and co-opted. So yeah. If you could centralize Bitcoin, if you could, then you could change the rules. So, but you can't centralize Bitcoin because of those nodes having each control. So my node, the hundreds of thousands of nodes, that more and more people realize this and they're fighting against it. And they are fighting when you don't know, by the way, because I bet you don't run a node. You don't see the world. You don't see the world I see. You don't know how hard this is going to be to stop, because I am every day I'm in that community. There is no way that's stopping. Those people are. That's why
there was people. If you told people about CV19, that everybody would be locked in their houses for months on end and be forced to take
my node, and I'm doxing myself right now, but you couldn't find a number of my nodes. You couldn't find them. It's not doxing me. Like it's just so this is happening all globally, controlling this network, auditing this network. So to try to shut down every one of them, and they're more and more are popping up. And if there was that Orwellian control structure trying to do that, what do you think would happen? Right? In every market that you try to do capital controls, a black market exists. So on something so easy to, so something so easy to do this with and create more and more and more and more people fighting, you just explode it. The more attention to trying to kill it creates stronger decentralization and security. That's base layer. Second layer, and this is something that is going to help make your point.
Yeah.
And one of the things why we have to be way more vigilant is, okay, if right now, and this is why BlackRock ETFs, I think, and everything else were accepted. Now you have way more people coming in to be able to do this. Now, what if you could create the second layer, Lightning? So I pay every day in Lightning. It costs nothing, almost nothing. It's a transaction layer on top of Bitcoin that is growing faster than the internet itself. In the growth days, so you have a transaction layer that you're not going through Visa, banks, anything else. It's completely independent, and every 10 minutes it comes down. So I'm trading value with people all over the world right now. I will today on top of this network that makes the network stronger, and more businesses are taking that on each time.
Yeah.
If that happened, if that continued to happen, it accelerates the demise, because now you have an alternative system that nobody can stop. It accelerates the demise of this system. So what is
100%.
happening? So what is happening right now is there is a whole bunch of money racing into essentially saying Lightning doesn't scale and use this kludgy thing or this thing. And that money is, I believe, from state actors, other actors, staggering amount of VC money coming in to, because if you could stop Lightning Liquid and something we invested in called Fedi, if you could stop these things from growing as fast as they're growing, and you could create an instrument on top of Bitcoin through the second layer, then you could suppress Bitcoin's price through, just like they did in derivatives on gold.
Gold, yeah.
And you could create that alternative reality. So that's where I think that's where you're going if you disconnect some of these thoughts. But I am so close to all of these things. Like, trust me. In the venture capital company, I've seen 20 odd of these kludgy things right now, and you can see where the money is coming from. Massive valuations, essentially saying Lightning doesn't scale.
So there's a question at this point. So just a physical example to bring everybody in non-digital. So there were lots of people that were oil prospectors in America. And then one group of guys, along with the rail, got Rockefeller family, along with Rothschild-funded rail, got specifically cheap pricing to go to market, cut the price to flush everybody out, and ended up using press gangs, some violence, and eventually everyone sold and got consolidated because the psychopathic money comes in. In the same way, we have an entrant now in BlackRock. Do you think they're not going to want nodes? They're not going to want to have more of a say? We know what they symbolize by some of what they do and the things they've pushed, like the climate agenda and various other things. In time, by force of regulation, if they could just say something quite innocuous, hey, look, we're the government. If you own Bitcoin, you have to declare it. So you're going to go, well, what do? I either go dark, which is illegal. They make like they did with gold. You either kept your gold or you handed it in 1933. And you eventually say, okay, I better fill in the clipboard. I've shown up on Francis's program on YouTube saying I run a node. I can't say I don't own any Bitcoin. I'll say I own one. And off you go, you fill that in. Slowly they start with registering you. This is what they did with metals. They're going to say, listen, we don't want to, we just want the information. We just want the information. They slowly go about collecting information. Then a few years pass, another decree comes. Well, we've seen you've made actually quite good capital gains. It's not actually that fair to the peasants that we're paying UBI. You need to be extracted against capital gains, da, 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 da. You've done this, you know, new law, tax extraction. As long as someone else is controlling the laws and can actually put you in a position where you could be deemed to be doing some illegal. And don't forget, they weaponize the media. They can say, these bastards don't want to pay their share. All of these things, all these psychological pressures.
Francis,
they will never let you have your own money because they lose their control over you. And they know this, and we know this. So how will they go about to enforce that on us?
Here's the thing I would say. With everything you know about the existing system, what it is, I'm surprised you don't want to run a node. I'm surprised you're not spending all of your time moving faster on Bitcoin. I'm surprised.
I mean
that sincerely, because you know where the other system goes, and you know also how money can manipulate media, and money can manipulate and all the control structures. So for me, all of these conversations that you're saying, I already know. You know, I wrote a book about it. Right. I know where it goes. I know everything it goes. Just so you know, I was one of the key holders on the trucker strike in Canada. They came after me and through media and everything else and said it's effectively how I was a fascist and all of these things retroactively on law, and I thought my bank accounts were going to get shut down. This is in Canada that's supposed to be democratic. And then that moving out all around the world, it drove Bitcoin adoption faster all around the world because people saw if this could happen in Canada, it would happen. It could happen everywhere else. And so each each control structure that's happening is actually driving this this faster, but some people are spending all of their time yelling at the control structure. And if you just move your time, so what do I expect right now in Canada where I am? More and more people are noticing this. Poliev in Canada, who I'm also close to, and he's close to me because he read my book and he realized how broken money was, and he realized what's going to happen out of this and how it's going to be a control structure. And he took the opposite stance about free markets. And right now, if there was an election call today, he's going to win a super majority. Because more and more people know this. Now, if he doesn't get elected and we keep going down this centralized path, because remember, every time that you're going down this path, it creates an opportunity for somebody else to tell the truth. Yeah. And so if we keep going down this path and voters vote in Trudeau again, then I probably move to a different country and I take my wealth with me and I just get on a plane and I have Bitcoin in my head. And how do you stop me and come after me? So as more and more, and remember, all governments, all global, instead of preying on their citizens, right, where they are now, they're gonna be in service of their citizens. And governments that move faster to Bitcoin and start to understand this, then will be beacons of hope for people with real wealth. Nations always try to track labor and capital. The best labor and capital. So those people will move, just like it's happening to El Salvador right now, and leave the other ones behind where they'll fail faster.
The thing is, we have a synchronized reaction to crypto. El Salvador, maybe Argentina, okay, they're exceptions. They quite extend, you know, there's quite a decision to move to both those countries. It's not London, if you're in Canada or whatever. And most of the Western English language nations are taking the totalitarian tiptoe. So you literally, it's not a big arbitrage that you have for friendly.
You're just measuring it now versus where it'll look like in 3 years.
I'd love for it to tip.
It's going to tip, but where does it tip? It tips from, so the people that are closest to the money monopoly don't see the great. So just if you're in the US, most people don't know this, but we have modern day slavery through a modern financial system. Yeah. And you know that, but you probably don't know how much you actually steal from people in Democratic Republic of Congo that have their labor constantly revalued so that you can extract their cobalt for the batteries. Inside of our economic system, inside of the people in the West, they're just starting to see what has been going on for years as monetary colonialism that has extracted wealth from 7.5 billion people in service of them. And now it's coming after them. And now they're starting to wonder. So now, because technology is always from the bottom up. And who gets technology first? Technology empowers the people that are most hurt by a monopoly power. And it doesn't matter if it comes in money or anything else. So today, who's going first in countries, or who's going first in other businesses or people? You can front run your nation. You can front run your business. You can front run your country. Bitcoin doesn't care. It's an open monetary network. And so nations now who were the worst, the bottom of the barrel, getting extracted from the worst and had crime rates and everything else to in service of that, went first.
100%.
Right. And
there's
and
a wholesale revolution actually going. I spend most of my time telling people in the English language nations to leave their country for the direction that they're taking. And you've elucidated to where they should move to, and they will further come. But that's our biggest issue. I feel the inertia. It's not a message that people take. They'll say they've got kids at school and all of this. And I say, go to the freedom. Go to the freedom. Leave the trend is wrong. You're heading on a downer. It only gets worse and it's accelerating. And the only way we undermine them is you vote, not in an election, but with your feet. Because suddenly they start seeing the massive wealth saying, you're turning into a shithole. And
first, you vote with your money, and you change your money. And once you change your money, they have no power over you. Because if you have your house and all of your
Used.
assets, if you have all of your assets inside that country, then that's why people stay. Because if they left, all of their assets are seized. They can't get out. But if you have your assets in Bitcoin, you're mobile anytime. There's countries that want you. And so I just did a conference, put on a conference in Madeira, in Portugal. And in that conference, the president of Madeira asked me to come there 2 years ago to be able to, how do we create a bottom-up Bitcoin economy so we can be the new Silicon Valley of the world? Because it doesn't care where you are. It's a global monetary ledger. It doesn't care where you are. And we can attract Bitcoiners and build a robust economy here before the EU breaks up. Because of the monetary system and all of it. So,
The failure
so
there, yeah.
for failure there. So what I'm suggesting is, Francis, and this is why I'm so close to it, I'm seeing this ecosystem explode everywhere. Explode. When I went to Madeira, there is a full purchasing. You could buy lots of different things in Bitcoin, and everybody's spending in Bitcoin. I went out for a fishing trip with my son. The captain said, "Well, what are you doing here?" I talked about Bitcoin a little. He goes, "That's super interesting. Well, how do I do it?" 2 days later, he adds Bitcoin on his as a payment mechanism. That payment mechanism, he sent me a note the other day saying four people have already booked paying Bitcoin. And Bitcoin at that time was worth 60,000 in Canadian dollars. Now it's worth $97,000. So he's just getting more and more. And so now he's taking that into other people in the business, and it's exploding. And so every one of those nodes, every one of those people that is making that decision is actually making this network stronger at an exponential rate and removing the power over them. That's what's
So
happening.
just going back to that, you know, the tokenization they want to bring. What if they put proxies over all physical assets? That's quite clear. Property, they've discussed this. Vitalik Buterin was talking with some Chicago professor how you'll have to state the own value of your home. You'll have a proxy derivative token. And when you do that, if they believe that you've understated, people can just buy you. It's a forced sale. It's almost got all the documents you need already pre-conveyanced so that other people could literally buy you out and instigate an immediate rental agreement against you. So we see this tendency, this totalitarianism, this you will have nothing. That's going back to the World Economic Forum you mentioned a couple of times. And tokenization could come to Bitcoin too, that you may even have a digital proxy of the Bitcoin you own, yeah, as a digital asset.
So that's if that happened, it wouldn't be decentralized and secure. It would be centralized. And if that ha and that's why the so that's actually why I'm specifically saying it won't be centralized, because there's too many people know that this, not that that won't be tried. I'm very different. So when you're saying all of these things that Vitalik says, or these people, like it's just complete nonsense. Of course you would say that if you were trying to control a system. Of course you would say that if you're trying to drive a system of fear. Of course you would try that. All of these things will be tried. I just don't know why you pay any attention to it, because you can move all of your energy into the new system, and that system is so powerful. It makes this redundant. It goes away. And you don't have to do anything, but so people don't move from fear to more fear. And right now, there's so many people caught in, they believe Bitcoin is just another thing that drives that fear. And I'm sorry, Francis, but in some of what you're, the questions, they might be questions, they might seriously be questions, but you're coming across as this is going to happen because you're so caught, you're so mad at the existing system. And I understand why you're mad. I totally understand why you're mad. But you don't realize you're making it stronger because you're scaring people, because this new system works entirely differently. Entirely differently.
My
I'm
motives are
li
when
I
you're
I'm li
making a commitment. So you're wholly immersed in Bitcoin. Everything you
I'm
own literally is in Bitcoin in terms of your payments and your liquidity. Obviously, not your
so
home, everything.
yeah,
Before
not
making that transition, a robust kicking of the tires is absolutely required.
100%,
And
100%.
so my questioning is, taking someone who's done the deep dive and actually being the devil's advocate, which is the role I'm playing as someone who actually owns some Bitcoin, but thinks I'm not that confident that I would be holistically Bitcoin. I think there's a stable of horses. Bitcoin may be the fastest one, but it's more likely to get lame under certain conditions. It needs power, it needs internet, etc. I'll have some physical gold. That's kind of where I'm coming from. And I actually evangelize a lot about the good parts of it. But when people are holistically, I want to stress test, because it's kind of like it becomes a belief system. It becomes almost cultish. You aren't absolutely devoid of attacks or point of failure. You'd have real challenges where you represent an alternative money system, if you're not originally born captive, to what they want to bring. And people don't like, you know, I always say, I don't sell drugs. The CIA hates the competition. And, you know, that's my joke. But in essence, there's a bone of truth in that as well. An alternative money system to the people that recognize, and the great famous Rothschild saying of, I care not to make the law, providing I control the issuance of money.
Agreed.
This is the seminal issue. It's almost my strap line. I say it three times every time. They, whoever, and you say they doesn't exist. Well, I have a feeling that actually there is groups and societies that do exist. I don't just say it's ephemeral, it's all a figment of my mind. That might not be exactly what you're saying. You're saying you're giving them power. I recognize that. But there are people that get value out of extracting at and keeping others down. There is a dumbbell society. There's a genie curve that has been hollowed out. And like you say, I 100% agree that that was not accidental, and that they wring their hands and go, oh, it's terrible. Yes, we must do something about it. It's doing exactly what they want, in my take of the world. And that there is a they implied in that, in my sense. And I recognize that don't empower them by talking about them. But the fact of the matter is, they aren't going to go away if they truly exist. If they're having meetings, they have the power of law behind them, they have all of this. These are very strong system-based attack vectors that we can't just say, ignore, all in on this.
Sears was very strong before Amazon. Blockbuster was very strong before Netflix. This is a change of the rules, a massive change of the rules to money that is decentralized and secure. And all of these parties are getting repriced in it right now. Google's cash flows are getting repriced. Google is getting repriced. All of these people inside the system are getting repriced. And I'm not guessing. You could look at any 4-year period of Bitcoin, and you could see that that's happening. The IRR of Bitcoin is 50% per year and will stay that. So that means if you're investing inside that system, in anything under that system, if you're not getting 50% IRR a year, you're losing money to Bitcoin. It is repricing everything. Your choice is, and here's what's happening right now, why I say this, that it's growing so fast. We invested in a company, Ellen Markets, and you probably wouldn't even know the company. It's a derivatives exchange on Bitcoin. So what's the difference? But derivative exchange everywhere else, you'd have just total counterparty risk. And if Nickel fails, then they reprice everything and they paper over it so it doesn't fail, right? It's because there's so many derivatives that if it failed, the whole system would fail. So it's just a paper, it's just nonsense. And that whole thing is also suppressing gold price. It's also the entire gold. So this is outside that system built on Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin doesn't have any counterparty risk, this exchange doesn't have any counterparty risk. So when we invested in it, and so you think about how big the derivatives market is. When we invested in it 7 months ago, it was doing 50 million in trading volume. Tiny margins, because it's just trading, so losing a little bit of money from their operating costs each month. This month it'll do 900 million 7 months later, but it's so profitable now, and all of its profits are in Bitcoin, that you have venture type returns on top of a venture type asset. So now
that's a great investment, and I'd love to be in an investment like that, because I see all the growth as long as it doesn't. You see, sometimes when you go to the moon, if that ever happened, you have a rocket that carries you for part of the stage, then you drop that off.
So
And the
let's.
other concern is Bitcoin could be to keep people out of physical gold, to keep everyone in, to move everyone into the digital space, the engineering of that and the sophistication, and then it could be destroyed. It could be sacrificed. BlackRock could take a complete loss. Everybody could potentially do, and we say, sorry, it's the CBDCs, and this is your thing. And essentially, you've had an on-ramp into a digital environment where people have got trained on the new world, which is needed and required. You've had an asset that was a diversion away from precious metals, which people have been the traditional insurance against fiat system. And then they can go, we lost.
You can imagine I'm not trying to say this from an ego standpoint. I'm just, because I spent so much time in this and moved all my attention to it, all of the things you're saying, which I agree with, that because I was the same as you 4 years ago. I was like, there's no way that this could survive. So I totally understand where you are, and I totally understand where other people are in their understanding of this. I moved my intention, I moved everything into this so that I could see every single attack vector and what was happening, and then what I would need to build, how I would help entrepreneurs build things that solved from those attack vectors. And what I'm trying to, and there's no way I could do it on this call because it takes years of research and depth and understanding exactly where the attack vectors are and what the response to the attack vector is. But what I can tell you is, for me, I am not worried. I'm not worried about any of this. In fact, I'm empowered by it, because everything that is making this worse makes this better faster. And I can't believe I get to invest in it. I can't believe I get to invest in the best entrepreneurs on the planet building for a more just society. I can't believe, and get very wealthy by doing that, by healing society. I cannot believe that I get to do that. I'm already living in abundance. Every day I get to, the volatility aside, all of my prices are already following economic law. Everything's getting abundant. All of my relationships in this already look like that. Because when you put people together on a system like this, instead of divide them in the system we're on, it's I can't tell you how beautiful that is. It's so beautiful. So when anybody is in this existing system telling me what it looks like and what it will look like, and I'm in the other system and having an entirely different experience, for me now, even though 4 years ago I wasn't there, for me now it just feels like, okay, well, if you want to measure the system from where you are and yell at it, okay, but why don't you just move more of your time into the system that stops that system? That's the and that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you have to do it tomorrow or anybody has to do it tomorrow. I'm just saying, for me,
I'm sold on doing something constructive that undermines the system rather than screaming in primal scream therapy in a padded cell, which is what we spend a fair amount of time doing, trying to convince others that may not be at a high state of readiness, who don't understand the fullness of the situation. Sometimes you have to save yourself first, and that's why I actually am engaged in the crypto market, and I do hold some Bitcoin. My concern is always for someone who has certainty about the future. So, you left that.
Yeah, and I want to be careful with certainty. What I would say is, the world we live in is a construct of our beliefs, and we measure the world through our consciousness rather than, every single person has a different view of the world. If I walk down the street with somebody else, we will see two different opportunities, and the world changes as a result of our thoughts and the interactions and people we meet, and ideas change the world. So my certainty is not from certainty of a protocol, or my certainty it comes from what I do literally changes the future. What you do changes the future. And I believe in humanity's ability to come together in service of humanity. I believe, and even though today that doesn't look like that, and so if my belief is that, you can't change my belief on that. I believe that by doing taking these actions, by me spending this hour and a half with you on this podcast,
it's good work. It's God's work.
But it might bring some people to be able to understand this. Two and a half years ago, somebody came up to me at a conference and said, "I wanted to introduce you to my wife and 3-month-old girl," and said, "You are the reason for this." And obviously when somebody says that, you're kind of taken back. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, "Well, I was completely nihilistic. I was so hopeless. And then I read your book. I started listening to your podcast, and I started to understand what you were talking about. And then I started to accumulate some Bitcoin. And then I started to see hope in the world. And I started to hang around with some other people. And because of that hope, I met my wife, who he introduced to. And because of that hope, we decided to have a child, because now I see the world totally different." For me, it was super emotional. I've heard the same story kind of thousands of times now. Super emotional. But it's not emotional for the reason you think. It's emotional for me for this reason. All of the other people who impact, I didn't change him at all. He changed him. All of the other people who impacted me to see all of these ideas, who I can't even count, changed me to be somebody that could see somebody else to change them. And that's how the world changes. All of us, we think we're just this, we've always been the same.
Yeah, there's a connection.
There's a connection to all of us, and these connections count. And so in the world we live in, it's dividing us like crazy, and most people being divided are yelling at it and giving it more strength. And when you understand what the world really looks like, when you get out and talk to people and how beautiful most people are, 99% of the people in the world are the same hopes, same dreams, everything else. And that connection matters a lot. That's what I believe in. And once that's seen, you're not going to stop it, no matter what.
Yeah, my king, all that I love, because I don't believe in just dooms. And you mentioned the word nihilism. I had to look it up a couple of times because people will accuse me of nihilism. But it's also nihilism, the definition also says, is refusing to see a truth. There's part of nihilism. It's not just doomsdayism, and we're all dead and we're going to die. Definitely to say taking any form of action straight away begins a mental process where, instead of being deer in the headlights, and we do a lot of things talking about what we might potentially go through, to take action. So on that, you've got me sold. It's just a question of when you put faith in one thing solely, you've got to be damn sure on that. And there's so many, I scenario cast, I'm forward looking by nature, and I know who the actors are. And I say, if the minute you stop seeing every trade as a trader, which I've thought couldn't lose, invariably I got punished badly on, when I had a certainty, invariably, because actually you're just clicking. And in some senses, this is a long-term trade. It's actually an investment, which is basically...
I'm not... I don't see it yet. And that's the difference between... this isn't a trade for me.
I don't see it as a monetary sense, by the way. Yeah. I know...
That's so what I mean. For me, that's why it might look like a religion for other people. It's not a religion or anything else. I want to live in a world on an honest ledger. I want to live in a world with truth. I will not live in a world with a dishonest.
It's an alignment with principles of honesty.
And I'm gonna do everything I can to make sure the honest ledger wins. And I don't care about personal sacrifice. Don't care about anything else. I am going to live, and my kids are going to live in a world with an honest ledger. And if people want to live in a world with a dishonest ledger, they can, but I'm not going to.
I like that's a great framing. To me, that's a winning framing. If the system, we know the system we're in is failing. So actually you're marrying the cost of a guaranteed system failure on an uncertain date to you, but possibly known for insider traders in the old system, versus the potential that there has to be a new system and Bitcoin could be it. And is showing the signs and seems to have shown up at the opportune moments. Coincidences sometimes worry me, if I'm honest, but let's just say we can agree and disagree on that. But it does represent the choice. How do you, before we finish, because we've taken a lot of your precious time and we really appreciate it, and I'm sure everyone's going to enjoy you know, the back and forward here. But how do you differentiate between a version one being the final solution and answer versus, you know, these later cryptos that'll have more tech, do things faster and better? Why would Bitcoin as the original, apart from getting plaudits to being the original crypto, deserve to be the final and primary chain? How do we not get to a point where, or is it because it's scaled so much, no one will ever consider something else? I lived through the forks, by the way, BCH and BSV, and it was decided that this one, you know, still is the original Bitcoin and all of that. But what's your comment on that and the rest of the crypto world? How's your framing for there?
So I won't be able to go into that in depth right now, just because I have to run for another call.
Sure.
What I will do is we can either come back on, but go to my website and jeffbooth.ca and find an article there called Finding Signal in a Noisy World. You will probably have to read it 3, 4, 5, 6 times to really understand what I'm saying there. But what it says is there can't be another one that works. There can't be. Once you discover this, and by the way that this is fit, it's a protocol, not a company. And when I said before, you're thinking about this as a company or a technology that can be changed.
It's a language. It's
a protocol. But for the why I wrote that article is so many people were confused by this over and over, and it's turned out to be one of the most reference pieces in this in the Bitcoin space, and actually in the other coin space, because it's moved a whole bunch of people to understand kind of a different why at a first principles physics level that this can't be replicated.
Excellent. How do people, I think you gave us the website, and you mentioned that you have problems with spammers copying your social profile. So best way for people to stay in touch and to continue to be inspired by you, which you are, and I congratulate you and thank you for that. How do they stay in touch?
Thanks. Just that website, jeffbooth.ca. You could find me on Twitter, or you could find me on Nostr. Nostr is actually probably better today. Because it's decentralized, and decentralized, it can't be shut off. But any of my social media profile, if it's not listed on that website, I'm not there. Please don't follow them.
Yeah, excellent. Jeff, thank you very much for your time. We extended here. We truly appreciate it. And I think there's a part two in the offering in a couple of months' time. So thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Francis.
Bye-bye for now.